The 3HL, coming up this afternoon from 3 to 6 p.m. Now it's time for Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone.
Hour 2 of Blaine and Mickey on this Monday. Great to have you with us post-AFC and NFC championship games. Now 2 weeks out from the Super Bowl. And Blaine, for the first time ever in the Super Bowl, of course it would be Tom Brady who did it. A team will play on its own field for the Super Bowl. Think about that. All those years where we thought, oh, this team's going to do it. This team's got it. Because they don't hold the Super Bowl in many places. So your team has to happen to be good when it happens. Bucks have been bad for long, long stretches. Here comes Tom Brady and Gronk. And they start, you know, getting hot at the right time. I think they were, what, 7-5 at one point? And then they got on a roll at the right time, playing their best football. And despite three interceptions yesterday in Green Bay, Bucks defense harassed Aaron Rodgers all day.
And JPP. And Shaq.
Shaq.
They had 2 and 3 sacks apiece.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Shaq Barrett was that dude was a free agent. Anybody could have had that dude.
Titans. Yeah, Titans. Yeah.
You know, you just invest your money in different places. And Green Bay's got some dudes, and they were free agents too. You know, I mean, they got they got some dudes.
You just poking me, man. You're poking me, Mickey.
There's a bunch of lit
real quick right now.
JPP, dude, that dude's been a free agent, I think, more than once.
Titans to draft him when he went to the. I was like, oh no, go get him. Yeah, even though he said, I think I read this one clip where he said he didn't go to school to read.
Well, I didn't either. I don't hold a grudge to him. I didn't go either to read.
Well, that was I wanted him because I saw him do a human backflip at that big. And I said, hey, if that dude's 6'4", like it can do a backflip with no hands, and then he runs like a force, that's the dude. We could teach him everything else. Yeah, we didn't, but then he blew up his hand with fireworks.
But it doesn't even matter. Like he's got a hand and a half.
Yeah.
And I'm not poking fun of it. I mean, literally.
And he's stopping him from rushing.
What he's got left for his hand is hard to look at. That man went through a fireworks accident that was awful. Doesn't matter. He'll still go get you 8.5, 9 sacks, then show up in the playoffs and just harass the heck out of a Hall of Famer. JPP, man.
Yeah.
I mean.
I told you, pass rush is an art now. These dudes, they get them. They understand how to rush, man. So I just love Tom Brady's interview when he said, well, whenever you're the first of something, that means it's pretty good. I firmly believe he was talking directly to Bill. Yeah, I do.
JPP, by the way, 9.5 sacks this season. 9.5 sacks for JPP again.
Oh, man. How many sacks? Shaq had 15, didn't he?
Shaq Barrett had.
How many did he have?
I got the list of all the free agents. Za'Darius Smith had 12.5.
But he probably wasn't at 15 there. Yeah, Shaq, man, he knows, man. That one time I thought he was offside, and they showed him slow-mo. He just timed that thing up perfect. I'm like, they're getting a beat on the snap count now. Yeah, I'm interested to see if Kansas City offensive tackles can hold up against those guys. It's going to be interesting. They may have a quick passing game because Fisher now is out. They're already up with another backup guy. So they're going to have to – I don't think it's going to be as easy as people think, but they got to get rid of that ball pretty quick. Yeah, them dudes is coming.
Shaq Barrett, 8 sacks this past year.
Oh, 8. He backed it up. He had, what, 15 last year?
Yeah, but wouldn't you have taken 15 last year and 8 this year from anybody?
Oh, man, I would have just – oh, man.
Yeah, 19 is the team.
Yeah, I'm going to tell everybody what you were talking about on the break. It's like, yeah, I would have got on my knees and just, begged for you to come to the Titans. And you were talking about begging to make sure you smell the meat.
No, Blaine, I told people.
For Thanksgiving.
Yes, we got into this. We should just run what we talk about in the commercials. And we got to talk about Thanksgiving because we're talking about Matt Stafford. And you threw out doomsday. To me, the biggest doomsday scenario for the Titans would be if he went to the Colts because you'd have to see him twice. And I don't want to see that guy twice.
Oh, man.
And one in his career. But you're like, you know what's going to happen. Patriots will get him. then Bill Belichick and the Patriots will be right back to just trucking right on along, because he would, you just know he's going to go there. He's going to be 33 in February. He's got like three, four, however many good years left. So then we got to talk about the Lions. We got to talking about Thanksgiving. And I told you I have certain rules that I live by. And one of them is, like on holidays, I never eat salad. Yes, I have certain rules that I live by. Like on holiday, I never eat salad because I'm not there for the salad. I go to Publix right now and buy a big bag of lettuce. Why would I waste stomach space on that? That's the dumbest thing ever. I come to your house for Christmas, Thanksgiving, the big ones.
New Year's.
Don't even slide the salad over there. I'm there to eat the other stuff. So, and you were like, and if people have listened to this radio station, and you know this well, I have the stomach of a 23-year-old cat. So anything, like if you have a food and you're showing a picture of a pepper or an onion, it just destroys me. You know, I can't even hardly drink a milkshake anymore. I'm intolerant of lactose. All these terrible things are happening to my stomach. And you said, well, how do you survive on Thanksgiving? I said, this is a little known secret about Thanksgiving. It's the bland food Super Bowl. Turkey, bland. Ham, bland. Right? Turkey and dressing. Dressing is so bland. I can literally pack that stuff in all day like a camel just filling my hump. I can eat it all day. And so you're like, man, I forget you had all these weird food rules, because you and I did a show and then we didn't do a show. So we're back together every day now, the way we're having a good time, the way we like it. And I said, Blaine, you've forgotten the most important rule I ever told you, because one day you came on a 3HL, you weren't feeling good. You weren't looking good. Man, I'm going to have to go home. Oh, gosh, I'm going to have to go home. I said, what happened? You said, I went in the refrigerator. You had some kind of meat in your refrigerator. And it's left over from something. You're like, you know, I eat my leftovers. I started getting into that, man. I ate it. And I said, let me ask you a real serious question. Did you smell it? And you said, what? And I said, Blaine, you may think I'm the dumbest person ever, but I'm going to give you some good life advice right now. And you didn't even remember it, which crushes me, because I asked you in the commercial, do you remember this? You said, no. I'm going to tell you again. And everybody listen, smell the meat before you eat. Smell the meat before you eat. Hey, man. Hey.
What? I want you to say what you just said and then say after that, that's what she said.
I think you got me covered on that. Hey, man.
Oh, man.
Throughout world history, a lot of man's problems could have been solved. Smell the meat before you eat. Yes. You can't just go fishing through the refrigerator like, when do we have these pork chops? I don't know. I think I'm going to try one. Hey. Take it out. Take the lid off of it. Let it sit for a minute. Then get a big whiff. Smell it. Smell the meat.
All right. So what would you recommend today? I have some. My wife got some ribs yesterday. She ordered it. And I didn't eat because I was out meeting some, you know, doing a business meeting. So I said, oh, no, I already ate. So I'm going to eat it today. You know, should I smell the meat before I eat the ribs? Or they go okay after what yesterday? Yesterday, we just ordered it yesterday from the store, I don't know where she ordered it from, but
I'm going to tell you something. No,
it was from a nice little franchise.
You're jumping to conclusions here. It's just from yesterday, dude. Some of the sickest I've ever gotten was stuff just handed right out of some commercial kitchen somewhere. Oh. Did your wife eat the ribs? How's she doing?
Yeah, she's doing pretty good.
Okay. I'm still going to smell it. I'm gonna smell the meat before I eat.
So don't make any assumption that it'll be good on one day.
You know, I saw some dude say the other day, Mickey Ryan never says anything that I like. Okay, better smell that meat before you eat. Home meat. Sorry, that was like my butch.
David Reed got that for us. I know he got that.
No, that was my homie. I tried to save my and homie at the same time. My homie. You got to smell the meat before you eat. We're not going to smell a Ryan Callahan, but he is going to join us next. What's the latest from Tennessee? What's the latest with FlightAware? What's the latest with all this stuff? We got the UT coach search news coming up out of Knoxville next. Blaine and Mickey on 104.5. The Zone. Appreciate appreciate you hanging out with us today. A little bit of an error there by me in the last segment. I tried to say amigo and homie at the same time, and it did not come out in any way like I intended it to. So we'll move on.
It came out exactly what you intended to.
No, it did not. I've got a couple of messages. Trust me, it did not come out.
Make mistakes. Everybody make mistakes.
So we're using
those big words, man.
Well, amigo and homie do not mix, but Ryan Callahan is both our amigo and our homie. He joins us now from 24/7 Sports. Let me ask you, how is the latest in flight tracking software these days, Ryan? And you know, where's a plane that we need to know its whereabouts of?
Well, that's always the fun part of these searches, right? Whatever everyone can find on Twitter and online to be able to track where these flights are, most of which you don't even know if they really are planes carrying Tennessee's athletic director or anybody else involved in a search, but they're planes connected to UT, so that's good enough. But yeah, there have been planes today in Charlotte and the Atlanta area, so there's definitely been some stuff like that to track, and you know, we're doing the best we can to make sense of it and see what we can piece together and what's been a pretty well-run search so far.
Well, Danny White, I saw him called by one national writer, Ryan. I saw him called a wizard in his ability to not let anybody have any idea what was going on in times like these.
Yeah, and I think right now you'd have to say that's pretty accurate based on what we've seen. The other part of this is he's a new athletic director that no one at Tennessee really knows, outside of a very small circle of administrators and donors that he's had a chance to get to meet over the past few days. So a brand new AD always going to be tricky for people to follow. But even national reporters who might have relationships with him from UCF and Buffalo, no one's really been able to get any information on this so far. And that's not shocking that we're still sort of guessing a few days into this where things are headed. I think we do have a sense that, you know, there are some candidates in this search. I think just we're still trying to piece together exactly how serious some of them are. So, but yeah, that's not surprising. He's very experienced in this. As he kind of said in his introductory press conference, I've done this and we've been able to keep things pretty quiet during searches at Buffalo and UCF. Now it's going to be more of a challenge at Tennessee. But so far he's done a pretty good job with that.
Ryan Callahan, Go Vols 24/7, our guest on Blaine and Mickey.
Well, Ryan, you talked about the short list. I guess give us the names on the short list because he's up there faking, ducking, and dodging us. I don't even know if the list that a lot of people are putting out there is the actual list.
Yeah, no, I think there's some truth to that. You know, that probably even some of the names that have been thrown out by some people as possible candidates maybe aren't really candidates. You know, I think there were some candidates vetted, I think, that were not really factors in the search. You know, I think TJ Fleck was one of those maybe where Tennessee at least vetted him, looked into things there. But nothing we've heard so far suggests that he's a serious candidate right now. And we've heard, you know, that PJ Fleck may have already been telling people that he's, you know, he's not going anywhere. So that's an example of that. So and you know, there were rumors last night of a big money offer to a sitting Power 5 head coach somewhere in the vicinity of $8 million a year, but we've yet to hear any confirmation of that. You know, I do think it's likely that Tennessee has aimed higher than people might have expected going into this search in at least one or two cases, but we just don't know yet exactly who that would have been targeting, and I'm not sure it's going to lead to that level of coach being hired. The name that this is continued to circle back to every time seems to be Tony Elliott. I think that's the if I had to guess right now, just based on what we know, I would say he's probably the most realistic candidate that you know, you maybe wouldn't call him the favorite, but just the name that we keep hearing the most. And so it would make sense that he's very much in play. You know, I could see him being maybe the floor of this search, so to speak, where, you know, last time when John Curry was making the hire, at least in 2017, Greg Schiano was sort of the floor of that search. That was the guy they knew would take the job if a few others didn't work out, and that was where they were headed until, obviously, Tennessee's fans had something to say about that. In 2012, Butch Jones was the floor of that search, and Tennessee knew he was going to take the job. He ended up being the one that got the job that time. So it seems like Tony Elliott is sort of the floor, because he's never been a head coach before. He's got a chance to take an SEC job if it works out. I think they have a pretty good sense that he would probably take the job if things, as long as things are negotiated well. But at the same time, you know, we'll see if anybody else is in play that's maybe a sitting Power 5 head coach, where I think they clearly would like to get an experienced head coach in this search, if at all possible. So that's what we're trying to piece together, is if there's a sitting head coach, who is it, and where are things headed there?
Well, Rod Callahan with GoBalls247.com. I guess I have to ask you, how soon do you think this hire, since it's so quiet, no one knows the extent of, you know, how long this process may take? Because it seems like the longer it goes, it hasn't been very long. But if it goes a long way, I don't know if that's really good. But how long do you think this search is? Could it be done this week?
You know, I think it will be done this week, just based on everything we've heard. And I you know, we were hearing, even on Friday when he was first announced, that they wanted, that they were hoping this would be done by even today or tomorrow. I think there's still a sense that they still might do that. You know, we've heard rumors even today of something potentially happening as early as today. So that's why it's so hard to pinpoint what's going on. But at the same time, we sort of think this could be entering the latter stages of the search. Even if there haven't been that many in-person interviews or anything like that, you know, the searches are being done differently right now with Zoom and everything. So a lot of this work could have been done before anyone ever left campus to have any in-person meetings, just vetting some candidates and talking with people just remotely. So that's the tricky part about this, is it's harder to track everything right now. And obviously the new AD, again, it's been tough to figure out where he's headed and what he's doing. But I do think there is a sense still that Tennessee wants to get this done by tomorrow or so, if possible. I wouldn't say that's a firm deadline, but I do think they would like to move pretty quickly. And one of the reasons for that, maybe, obviously National Signing Day is next Wednesday, so you want to give a new coach a chance to at least have the ability to sign some players if he sees anyone out there that he would still like to add to his new roster. And then you've got some players who are in the transfer portal or maybe considering entering the transfer portal, where the drop-out deadline for classes at Tennessee is this week. So you want to give those players a chance to meet a new coach and maybe stick around if they're willing to do it. And that would obviously help if you can make a hire by today or tomorrow.
I guess real quick, it doesn't seem like Lane Kiffin is part of this search. You get to see a lot of fans really wanting that to run it back again. Do you think that's even a possibility?
We haven't heard enough to necessarily rule it out, but we've also heard very little to suggest that he's going to be a serious candidate for this job. So my guess is that he's not going to end up being the hire. I do think he's had at least expressed to some people that he would have some interest in the job. So that's maybe the frustrating thing about it to Tennessee fans who like that idea, is I think he's a realistic option in some ways that at least would entertain the job. But at the same time, I just don't know that that's exactly what Danny White's looking for. And when you look at his track record of making hires, you know, he seems a little more likely to make a little bit of an out of left field hire that, that catches people by surprise a little bit, or, it is maybe a little less of a household name already, but this is his first chance to hire an SEC head coach. So, you know, maybe it's going to be a higher profile coach than we expect, but Lane Kiffin's not a name that's come up very much. And I think his history at Tennessee with donors and things like that, you know, if it got very far, I think still might shoot that down. Just people knowing how that ended the first time around, obviously 10 years ago.
We're on with Ryan Callahan with GoBalls247.com.
Ryan, how much different, because you've known this program for a long time, how much different do you think this search is with Daniel White conducting it versus how it might have been right now if Philip Fulmer was conducting it?
You know, I do think there is a difference in the perception of how attractive this job is with Danny White running the show. I heard when he was first hired, there was talk of some candidates who maybe wouldn't have otherwise been interested that suddenly could be in play for Tennessee with Danny White as AD. And I think it is that hiring alone is a move that I think signals to some people that Tennessee is maybe getting things straightened out finally. that we'll see how this goes. They've obviously got to hire the right coach to get out of the wilderness they've been in for the past decade or so. But I think there is a sense that Danny White is the type of AD who is who is enough of a home run hire that some people can see things turning around under his watch. So, yeah, I think that hiring was a big deal, and I think if Philip Fulmer was running this search, given the situation, especially the NCAA cloud that's going to hang over this search, I think that, you know, some people would be a little more scared off. And they still might be scared off by the situation, by not knowing what NCAA sanctions there might be related to the investigation. But I think Danny White's hiring is, I think, giving it at least the impression that this staff, this administration, has an idea of how to turn things around and is serious about getting it right this time.
Obviously, the transfer portal was the big story leading up to Danny White getting in the job, and some great players had gone into it, and just how that thing seemed to be taking a life of its own. He mentioned in his press conference, I'm going to get leadership together from the football team. I'm going to go talk to them. When I leave this initial press conference, his first thing he said he was going to do was start putting together an opportunity to speak to the football team. Do you know, or has it gotten out much about what he might have said to them?
You know, that not much has gotten out about that so far. Obviously, the early reports are that it was a really productive talk, and the players who have responded about it online and elsewhere so far have indicated they really liked what they heard. But yeah, not a lot of specifics so far on that. You know, he like you said, he met with a leadership committee. I think he wanted to be able to get some legitimate feedback from a smaller number of players rather than just getting in a room with 100 players and saying, okay, to throw a bunch of ideas at me. And I think, but he obviously liked the feedback that he heard. And I think there's at least a sense of direction there that, you know, it'll give players more of a sense of ownership and whatever the hire is, the fact that he got that input, even if it doesn't necessarily change who he would have hired or anything like that. So it was a good start. You know, I think it helps. But at the end of the day, I think for players looking to enter the transfer portal or not, you know, is that going to talk anybody out of it? I think at the end of the day, players are still going to want to know who their coach is going to be, and that's going to be the deciding factor as much as anything. So that's why, you know, one of the reasons I think you've seen players go ahead and jump in the transfer portal in some cases, and one of the reasons I think some others are at least on the fence that, you know, even if they're thinking about maybe waiting through the spring semester, there's still some uncertainty out there with this roster because they want to know who the next coach is before making a final decision.
Ryan Callahan with Go Vols 24/7 on Blaine and Mickey here on 104.5 The Zone.
Well, yes, Ryan, I guess where is the investigation with the NCAA and everything else? It's not over. And even with the internal investigation, is it over or is it still kind of plugging along?
You know, the sense that we've gotten is that the internal part of the investigation is mostly wrapped up, but that the NCAA part of the investigation isn't over yet. Donnie Plowman, the chancellor, did not have an update Friday during the AD introductory press conference as to when the investigation might wrap up on the NCAA's part. So that's probably a frustration a little bit for Tennessee and making this hire, is I'm sure any coach is going to have questions about what's coming down the pike with that, what sanctions might be on the way. And I think they can give a ballpark idea based on what they've heard from the law firm that they used in Kansas City that kind of specializes in these types of cases and has given them a ballpark idea of what to expect. But at the same time, it's still a mystery, and the NCAA can surprise you from time to time. So, yeah, that not really sure when that's going to wrap up. It could be days, it could be weeks, it could be months. You know, you never know with the NCAA, and that's something that could be sort of a dark cloud that ends up affecting who they are able to hire with this search. But, yeah, the investigation not wrapped up yet from the NCAA's end, and I think Tennessee sort of knows what it's found internally, but it's now up to the NCAA to poke around a little bit more and see if they find anything else or if their findings kind of match Tennessee's.
Not really knowing exactly what the infractions were, you know, with the investigation, but level one, level two, can you look at history with the NCAA and not a time frame, but what could be some type of penalty for, you know, those type of level one, level two infractions?
Yeah, well, you know, it depends on how many. It depends on how blatant they are in some cases. And then it also can depend on whether a lack of institutional control is one of the charges that's ultimately brought against Tennessee by the NCAA. As long as you can avoid a charge like that, and I think there's a sense that they can avoid a charge like that, especially since Tennessee has taken pretty swift action to make staff changes and get rid of some of the people involved. I think that's one of the things they obviously were trying to do, bring in that law firm that has a history, that they have a track record of doing a pretty good job of protecting schools in those cases, and doing what they can to sort of insulate them from further NCAA damage. So I think, you know, from what we've heard so far, I think people are thinking a ballpark idea might be there could be a 1 year postseason ban, something to that effect. There might be a bowl ban for 1 year. And then you might be looking at a loss of scholarship. And then beyond that, you know, they're hoping not much more. That's the hope, obviously, on Tennessee's end. Will it work out that way? You don't always know with the NCAA. And again, it depends on whether one of those failures to monitor or lack of institutional control charges comes along with everything else. So, but we'll see. But that's, I think the hope is that it's not much more than maybe a 1 year postseason ban. And even that, you know, still might be on the table.
I guess tell us a little bit about this wide receiver, this JUCO wide receiver, this 2021 commit, Addison, was it Anderson Kobe?
Yeah, that's a really interesting situation, and people were kind of scratching their heads when that news came out on Friday, and I was frankly a little bit surprised last week as it started to come together, but it's a guy that Tennessee started to evaluate and really look at seriously when Jeremy Pruitt was still on staff, and his remaining staff members, and including Kevin Steele, had continued to look at him, and they gave him an offer last week. And they're obviously we haven't seen much more of this, but this is an example of them doing everything they can to sort of help this roster in the meantime. And they gave him an offer last week and came up with a plan within a couple of days to get him on campus. So he arrived over the weekend and was expected to start classes as early as today in Knoxville. So he's obviously a midterm enrollee. He's a junior college player who is eligible to play immediately because he was sort of retroactively declared an academic qualifier coming out of high school. So you don't have to graduate junior college when you do that. And so he was free to leave right away, and Tennessee getting him on campus and adding him to the roster now. But he's a good player, really productive in his lone junior college season. And the best part of it for Tennessee might be, because the National Junior College Association, just like the NCAA, made it a free year of eligibility for everyone, this is the guy who comes in as a true freshman with 5 years to play for, just like a high school player, even though he's been at the junior college level for a year. So a nice pickup, and I think a guy with some good speed who really adds some experience and athleticism to the receiving core, and I think that's a position they really needed to address with Josh Palmer, Brandon Johnson, some other guys now out of the mix going into 2021.
Ryan Callahan with Go Vols 247.
RC, on the way out, this whole thing with Kevin Steele. So let's say you bring in some guy and he's got his full staff and he wants to bring him in. And let's just say something happened where the guy said, hey, I don't really need Kevin Steele, and he parted company. That would have been the strangest coaching tenure maybe in the history of this school, where the guy was literally the head coach for a while. But it's not implausible, I would think, that maybe somebody would come in and he never even wound up coaching a game.
Yeah, that's what was sort of amazing about the hiring. Much like the, you know, adding a player during a coaching search who's going to arrive on campus and be added to a roster without a new coach having a say in it. Really, it's just fascinating that happened when Tennessee very much knew that Jeremy Pruitt was likely on the way out, and that Kevin Steele was, you know, he could have been the long term answer at head coach, or he could have been, you know, a guy that he still could be, a guy who, as you said, sticks around on staff, but there was no guarantee of anything. So you don't see hires like that made very often. It made sense for Tennessee under those circumstances to have a head coach or an interim head coach who is not directly involved in any of the allegations, a guy's kind of fresh blood to come in and steer them through that period. But at the same time, yeah, there's no guarantee he sticks around. And I think given the way Danny White has helped, you know, operated with this search, you have to assume that the odds are probably pretty good that there's not going to be more than one or two coaches retained on this staff. And I don't know that you can assume anyone's going to stick around, just depending on who it is, because as you said, they may want to bring in all of their guys with them and not be worried about SEC experience or whatever. But, yeah, I would say there's at least a chance Kevin Steele sticks around. And if it is Tony Elliott, for example, he's worked with Kevin Steele for a year at Clemson before, so there's at least a tie there. So maybe it works out for him to stick around as defensive coordinator. Maybe he's not interested in that. We'll have to wait and see. But, yeah, it's a fascinating chapter that, you know, it maybe looked back on kind of like Kippy Brown back during the coaching search where he was interim head coach for a little while and then ended up not being retained or not sticking around. That could be the way this one turns out with Kevin Steele. We'll just have to wait and see.
Man, college athletics, you just can't beat it for drama. It's always lurking there somewhere around the corner. Thanks, RC, man. Always good catching up with you. Ryan Callahan, go Vols 24-7 for all the latest. All right, from RC to this. When we come back, there's a name that was floated out by our guy Ian Rappaport, Rap Sheet, this weekend of an interview for the Titans offensive coordinator position. And if you've been following the Titans for a while, it's a guy that you know. Also a guy who they were denied the opportunity to speak to that we brought up last week. We'll hit you with that knowledge. Next, it's Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone. Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zones. A lot of NFL teams making moves. Blaine, you're seeing guys, offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators get hired. I know we're still playing games. Got one more game, the big game actually coming up, Tampa Bay and Kansas City, the GOAT versus the young GOAT. And that's going to be fun and going to be real interesting to see if Tampa Bay can get after Mahomes and kind of knock him out of his rhythm. This is a whole nother thing about how you're going to try to stop that offense that we're going to spend probably time talking about this week and on out through the spring and the summer and the fall, because if you're going to try to win the AFC, you're going to have to figure out a way to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. Looks like it's going to be that way for a while. But there was a name. I saw Ian Rappaport, Rap Sheet, said this weekend the Titans had interviewed Pep Hamilton for the offensive coordinator position. So it had been really quiet. Then the name Pep Hamilton came out. And here's the other one. He reported that they tried to interview Texans offensive coordinator Tim Kelly, who's the brother of The Undertaker, as you said last week. But when that name came up and that news came out, the Texans don't have a head coach right now. So if you're Tim Kelly, it's not your college. You don't have to go recruit anybody. I mean, maybe you're just looking at a little film or, driving by the office periodically to check on your stuff. But they're denying him the opportunity to interview with other teams. And a new coach could come in there tomorrow and fire that dude. Hey, man, I got an offensive coordinator. So Tim Kelly not given the chance to interview with the Titans. Pep Hamilton was and did, per Rap Sheet. He was the Colts offensive coordinator in 2013, 14, and 15. He was the head coach and the GM of the D.C. Defenders of this latest round of the XFL, among some other jobs. He was Chargers quarterbacks coach this past season. He certainly got a lot out of Justin Herbert.
He did.
As the Chargers quarterbacks coach. So he's an interesting guy, but at least there is a name out there of somebody who they talked to for offensive coordinator. They're keeping that really quiet.
Well, maybe because they haven't made a decision on anybody to interview. So I'm assuming that's the only interviews and a request for Kelly, of course, with the Texans. So I don't know if they did that out of spite because of, Vrabel and Kelly and everything else. Or what's just intentional that they are going to make the new head coach keep him, and kind of position him where he becomes potentially a head coach candidate down the road. So it's hard to say, but man, I don't think teams should be able to do that. In saying that, I'm saying that because they fired their coach. Right. So if you're not hiring him as the head coach, he should be able to interview with anybody he wants to. There's no guarantee he'll be on the staff. That's how the coaching industry works. They hire people that they know and they're comfortable with. I don't like that rule at all. And that's not for favoritism to the Titans. That's for the actual individual.
Right.
Yeah, man, come on. Now. That's ridiculous. They need to get some of these rules. That's about as bad as the fumble into the end zone. They need to change that rule, too.
Well, we haven't even had time to talk about that. There's been so much stuff to happen. The fumble through the end zone, the touchback. A
couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm.
That rule goes back to 1906.
And that's a problem.
1906. And at that point, it was also a touchback if you threw an incomplete pass in the end zone. It was also a touchback. They did address that. But the NFL changed a bunch of rules, I guess, when it got rolling in 1933. And they left the touchback rule, and it's never been changed. And it dates back to 1906.
No.
It's 2021, man. We're about to play the 2021 season this fall, and that rule is that old. Now, How do you fix it? What do you do with it? That's the million-dollar question. And the fact that they've never, because inevitably it affects some games every year. You know, not necessarily playoff games, but it affected a playoff game.
Well, why can't you just do it like you do in the regular normal play? If somebody fumbles on the 50 and it goes out of bounds, going forward, then it goes back to the spot of the fumble. So I don't know, you know. Yeah, maybe because it's the end zone, and I don't know. You could be reaching for a first down, so it's a tough one. But I think it needs to be addressed.
And in reading it, it was all about the intent of trying to put the ball in the end zone, and you putting it there, but not by carrying it there. It was really confusing. Coach Mack and I actually texted back and forth about this one day because he sent me something about it. Maybe he'd heard us talk about it. And I sent him the article that the rule was from 1906. And I mean, I don't know, but there's smart people on the rules committee. You figure at some point the right person would get upset enough about it that that person could make a compelling case. But like you said, would it just go back to where the ball was fumbled? I mean, everybody from an offensive standpoint, I'm sure would like absolutely sign us up for that. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, that, I mean, and I'm a defensive guy, and I feel I don't like the rule. So, yeah, that one there. And we can even go all the way back to the Titans and, you know, put a bow on this. This is when Tannehill reached out and scored, and he didn't fumble or anything like that. But Vrabel talked about how he showed a film to the team that he don't want him to reach the ball out because of this possibility. Because, I can remember when UT had Pig Howard, and that happened to him, and he was trying to put forth a great effort. And he fumbled, and that lost the game, really. And then he never really played again after that. And he was a starter.
Yeah. He disappeared, that guy.
Mm-hmm. It means they didn't have the right structure there to support him, because I'm sure he took a lot of fan heat, players, sad and upset. But he probably just needed a hug and support at the time. I don't know if they did or didn't, but the guy was playing, and all of a sudden he disappears. That shows me he went to a dark place. All right, and that's okay. You go win some, you lose some. But, man, that shouldn't happen.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, since it happened in the playoffs and it was very high profile, is it something that comes up in these off-season meetings, you know, with the competition committee and those
guarantee.
Guys? Do they actually address it and try to change it?
I hope so. And what they changed to is a story. It may not come up at all. I don't know.
Well, over 100 years. Over 100 years.
Yeah.
As much as football's changed, that rule has not changed. And you mentioned that about Tannehill. There's video from NFL Films where he basically went to the sidelines and said, he's like, Mike won't give me a high five. He wouldn't talk to me after that. Where he was basically saying, you know, Mike doesn't like for us to do that. And apparently, because a bunch of people tweeted this, it's if you're with the Patriots, Belichick, if you can't do it. Like, Patriots players, Belichick, tell them, don't do it. You can't do it at all. We don't do that here. We don't reach for the goal line. You either carry it in or you just get what you get. You don't stick the ball out like that.
Yeah, because if fumbles, it could change possessions, yeah? But you just eliminate it all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Poor Browns.
What an effort by that guy, but man.
That was unbelievable.
No!
You go from thinking we're in this to I just lost us the game.
Yep. And that was definitely the biggest play of the game, for sure.
Oh, gosh, man, this has been some crazy plays in these playoff games. And we can talk about all that in the final hour of the program. We also got Chris Vanini from The Athletic, who covers college football, set to join us. He'll be on in just about 20 minutes. It's Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone.